Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with me now is Abraham Foxman, longtime national director of the Anti-Defamation League. He has a new book about online hate speech called Viral Hate, Containing Its Spread on the Internet. Mr. Foxman, welcome to WNYC.
It's good to be here. Good morning.
Hate speech and hate websites are as old as the Internet itself. Why did you write a book on viral hate now?
Well, you say old, it's about 20 years old. Hate's been around forever and ever and ever in various manifestations. But what we're seeing is hate on the Internet as a growing concern. And so it took a while for us to be able to realize how serious it is, how broad it is, and that we need to address it, or at the very least get people's attention to it, that it's out there, it's serious, and it is having impact.
And I guess if you say it's having impact, you're not a sticks and stones guy. You don't believe sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me.
Right. Absolutely. We haven't changed our belief in the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of expression. But this is something new. This is a very significant revolution in communication, which on one hand, as you know, provides great access, great information, interaction, education, even brought about revolutions. So, you know, it's got a lot of good stuff, but there's a dark underbelly. It's a superhighway for hate. And I'm not sure yet that we know its impact. We're seeing some of its impact on privacy. We're seeing its impact on civility, how people talk or do not talk to each other. But there is I would call it tsunami of hate out there being communicated throughout the world and languages in amounts that we need to take seriously.
I was looking, however, at the Bureau of Labor Statistics hate crimes trends page for 2003 to 2011 this morning, and it shows basically no change in the average number of hate crimes over that nine-year period. And I could argue, I don't really know, but I could argue that despite the increasing proliferation of hate online, which is speech, hate crimes, violence, has not changed. So maybe all the blah, blah, blah on the Internet is just blah, blah, blah.
Well, it's at this point, again, I think it's much too early to know. I don't think we yet have the handle to assess what the impact is. Look, in Jewish tradition, where I come from, we believe in the power of the word. Pious Jews, three times a day, ask the Almighty for help and keep my mouth from speaking evil. Historically, we have learned that words can turn into being killer. The gas chambers, the crematoria in Auschwitz did not begin with bricks. They began with words. I would even say 9/11, it wasn't with box cutters or flying planes. It was with words, evil, ugly words that eventually led to action. So there is this serious connection as far as we understand in history. It may be too early to know the exact impact, but how do you measure what happened in Boston? You know, they built a bomb based on what? Based on the Internet.
Is that included in your definition of hate speech, the how to build a bomb in the kitchen of my mom and all that stuff out there? Because that's not, you know, I hate Americans, I hate Jews, but it does enable terror.
It does, well, but you know, before they go to build a bomb, they're exposed to a lot of thoughts and theology and hatred and bigotry. You know, the man who went out to the Holocaust Museum and tried to do damage there, he was inspired by listening to web speech, hate speech.
One change that the FBI report did note was a doubling of the percentage of hate crimes since 2003 that are based on religion, as opposed to other categories of hate. And I would guess that this might be a rise in hate crimes against Muslims or people believed to be Muslim. Do you know those stats by any chance?
The stats are interesting. I think this is, you know, something magnificent about the United States. When 9/11 happened, we in the ADL were very much concerned that the result would be Islamophobia, that Americans will act out. And the Anti-Defamation League then took out an ad in the New York Times saying, don't fight hatred with hatred. And yet, Brian, I think it's something, I don't want to give it an evil eye, but there is something special about our country that there hasn't been this outpouring of hatred against Arabs and Muslims. I would say one is more than necessary, more than acceptable. But after 9/11, there were 400 acts directed against the Muslim community and over 1,200 directed against the Jewish community. So still, religious hatred, religious violence is still directed 10 times as much against the Jewish community than it is against the Muslim community. It isn't great, but it, on one hand, it says that our country is still pretty good.
Abraham Foxman, National Director of the Anti-Defamation League, his new book, Viral Hate, Containing Its Spread on the Internet, 212-433-WNYC. That last statement, and I don't know the stats, but that would be counterintuitive to a lot of people, that a Jew walking down the street in America is more likely to encounter hate than a Muslim walking down the street.
Right.
It doesn't make intuitive sense, given the context that we live in our times.
Well, listen, anti-Semitism is the mother of all religious bigotries. Jews are on the type of the hit parade on conspiracy theories. The anti-Semitism has been out there from all sides, and it's tough to get out of our system. But you're right, it is counterintuitive. Most people would think it's the other way around.
Christopher in Hoboken, you're on WNYC with Abraham Foxman. Hello.
Hi. I just want to quote something on this topic of, you know, sticks and stones. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can make me think I deserved it. And the other thing I have to say is that when...
And we know that suicide is one of the results of cyberbullying.
Yeah.
To your point.
That's where that comes from, I believe. And also just, you know, not fighting back. So I just read an article by a guy who said his grammar school teacher called him a little poof and hit him so hard he broke his glasses. And that licensed all the other boys to pick on him for the rest of the year. The other thing is that women who say something even mildly controversial or feminist on the web get a flood of hatred that men never get for saying anything much more provocative things.
Okay, it is a superhighway out there. But, Brian, you know, one of the mantras that we've embraced for all these years is the answer to bad speech is good speech. And it still makes sense. But what if the bad speech comes on in a tsunami? What if it's all over the place? What if it's, you don't know where it begins and where it ends? How do you answer it so that our usual traditional response doesn't necessarily work? And I think we need to be more creative in trying to determine how to respond.
So, for example, because you say over and over again in this book, since you know everybody's going to pounce on you and say, oh, you want to trash the First Amendment, that you're not talking about changing laws, that changing laws is the least effective way to combat hate speech. So what are you talking about?
Awareness. I think we're seeing very interesting something that's now happened on Facebook with thrashing of women. And all of a sudden, the industry, the commercial aspects are now beginning to take greater responsibility. Why? Because the public out there has been so outraged by the type of hate speech against women in this particular case that it's threatening advertisers. So within the parameters of freedom of speech, nobody's saying you can't say it. Nobody's saying you're going to be regulated. But the marketplace works. And the marketplace is a result of people caring, standing up, being heard, expressing what they think is acceptable or not, and it will have an impact.
Have you heard of Lindy West? Do you know who that is?
No.
Staff writer at the magazine Jezebel. She's been a guest on this program, and she writes and talks about why comedians shouldn't make rape jokes where women are the butt of the joke. And today she posted a piece about the kind of threatening comments that she's been getting in response from people on Twitter and elsewhere. And they're so awful and unfunny that I'm not even going to read any of them here. But most of them are about threatening to rape her or even kill her. And some of those people were not anonymous.
Well, the industry has basically tried to make an exception for humor. And I think that's not working either, because humor can be very, very hateful. Humor can be very damaging. And so I think, again, we're in the process of trying to reexamine what are the parameters, what's permissible or not. I hope we do it without legislation, without regulation, because Europe has legislations and regulations, and the hatred there is much worse than it is here. But we can't just say it's algorithms. We can't just say it's freedom of speech. We can't just say we have no responsibility. Brian, many years ago, the Anti-Defamation League drafted a statute called the Anti-Mask Law in the state of Georgia. And its purpose was to remove the anonymity of bigots. Our Constitution guarantees us the right to be a bigot, but it also says you have to take responsibility for your bigotry. When we removed the mask from the Ku Klux Klan, it began to decline. Comes 50 years later, the internet, and somehow puts that mask back on the bigot. And I think we have to struggle with finding ways to remove that mask, the anonymity, the ability to communicate whatever you want.
Restrict anonymity?
Yeah. Yes, I believe it's time to revisit the anonymity restrictions.
And Tanita on Staten Island, you're on WNYC with Abraham Foxman. Hello.
Hi, Brian. It's Antonina, but that's fine.
I apologize for the misplaced
tea. That's all right. I'm just calling to make the point that your guest just made about the case at Facebook, where they are finally, after a long delay, considering hate speech toward women. You know, and I'd also like to make the point that women are 50% of the world, and a woman can go anywhere and experience hate speech. So we can talk about groups here and groups there experiencing hate, but I don't think anybody experiences more hate than we do. And I think it's time to take it much more seriously, as your guest has said, and to consider that, you know, our freedoms to travel. Look at what's coming out of India these days, gang rapes on buses and in Brazil. Those kinds of things are fomented by, as your guest so rightly said, by speech. We must take it much more seriously. That's all I wanted to say, and thank you.
Antonina, thank you very much.
Now, there is an element of legitimacy once you see it on a tablet, on a screen, on a smartphone, whereas hate used to be communicated in brown bags or in some publications with small circulations. Today, it takes on this legitimacy of the fact that, whoa, everybody's talking about it. There it is, and therefore maybe it's okay. There's also no perspective. There's no perspective as to compare to what. What does it mean? Who's saying it?
You wrote on Huffington Post the other day that you commend Facebook for tackling the issue head on. What's Facebook doing?
Facebook is beginning to realize that it has a responsibility, that it can't just sit back and say, well, that's what it's all about. And Facebook has, on several occasions, for example, on the issue of there's a Jew hate. And so they've taken the responsibility that when you log on to that, there's a comment which says, this is a hate site. It's not a filter in the sense that you can't get there, but it does describe what it's all about. There's another website when trying to sell Mein Kampf. So there is a comment saying Mein Kampf is a hate book. Mein Kampf brought about or enhanced World War II and genocide against the Jews. So they're beginning to take responsibility by making some comments and direction, although not removing it and not totally censoring it.
More speech. Rather
More
than
speech,
less.
Yep.
Anna
Still.
In Shortsville, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Brian. I have three comments to make. I hope you'll be patient with me. The first, I would like to commend Mr. Foxman about the book. There's definitely a need for it. The second, in regards to the Muslim community crime against them, the Jewish community will document and report any incidents against them. The Muslim community is still afraid of pinpointing or putting the spotlight on them, and that's why they will not report any hatred crime against them. And the third, in regards to the Facebook, I absolutely agree with him. I can tell you a story about my nephew in Syria who was against the revolution. Somebody put a Facebook page where they described and put pictures of people who are against the regime, which in order the regime went out and arrested them. So absolutely, I do commend Mr. Foxman, and I hope we'll create a better statistic in regards to the Muslims.
Thank you. Thank you, Anna, very much. Could be the Muslim.
It is quite possible.
And underreported.
Well, also, we've been urging our government and the law enforcement around the country, they also underreport. It's not a major priority. But absolutely, I think the Muslim community needs to use the vehicles to report, because that's the way you get action and response from law enforcement and proper community response.
And you write in the book about some of the destructive and false stereotypes of Muslims today, including that today's moderate Muslims remain silent about radical terrorists. You include a list of statements that Muslim leaders have made denouncing terrorism and extremism, and a link to a William Salatin article to that effect. But you've also been controversial on a number of occasions for things that you consider acceptable with respect to treatment of American Muslims. For example, you've been criticized for saying in a Haaretz interview, that it's not hate speech for a congressman to call for government monitoring of the entire Muslim population of the United States because you said, quote, it's a natural response, America's got an issue, unquote. That was just a few months ago. I saw it in the New York Times quoting you in Haaretz.
Correct. It was in response to Boston, to the Boston Marathon situation. And I think we have to be careful on all sides. The fact that a congressman gets up there after a terrorist act in a major city and says, you know what, we may have to take a look at the community. We may need to take a look at where it's coming from, doesn't necessarily make that hate speech.
But if anybody ever said, after whatever it is that might be done by some Jews, that we have to take a look at the Jewish community. We have to monitor all Jews because some Jews may do some things. Wouldn't you jump up and down and scream?
Brian, yes, I would. But on the other hand, if the Jewish community was engaged in fundamentalist teaching and extremism, which called for Jewish jihad, it would make a difference. So, again, it's in a proportion. I wouldn't immediately jump on it as hate speech. It needs to be monitored. It needs to be watched. And I think the record in America, even with Congressman King's calling for it, is a pretty good one in terms of respect of the rights and the civil rights of the Muslim community in this country.
We have 1 minute left. You've been at this work for your whole life to try to reduce hate. How do you think you made a difference so far in the big scheme of things?
I think we've kept the lid on it. I think we've kept it somewhat under control. We haven't eliminated it. We don't have a vaccine or an antidote yet. I have a dream. My dream is that when we finally cross that frontier of the DNA, that we will be able to identify that which it is in our makeup. Brian, I survived the Holocaust because there was a woman, a Catholic lady who risked her life to save me. What was her DNA? What was the difference in the DNA of those who collaborated, those who stood by? And if we ever can get that stage...
Not eugenics to wipe out hate, though, right?
No, but understand where it's coming from. But absolutely, God forbid, no, not eugenics.
But understand where it's coming from. Abraham Foxman, National Director of the Anti-Defamation League. His new book with Christopher Wolfe is Viral Hate, Containing Its Spread on the Internet. Thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.